Hello, you've reached Arnold Pizza Shop. I'm out here now, I'm out killing pepperoni. If you want to reach me, if you want the pizza, I don't care, because I'm not here. Can't you realize that, idiot? But if you need a pizza sometime during the next few days, I can have it delivered to you, or maybe I will staple it to you. I don't care what you want on it, every pizza comes with pepperoni and with 9mm bullets on it. If you don't fuck around, I'll give you good pizza. If you do fuck around, I'll take a pepperoni and punch it through your head. Leave a name, number, serial number, how tall you are, whether you're susceptible to any diseases, and if you are, I'll come over. Maybe I'll give you a pizza, maybe I'll break off your arm.
We're supposed to hit 100 this weekend.
Friday doesn't look good for me.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, Friday. Friday looks real bad. Saturday and Sunday,
this
too.
Could be the first 3 days in a row that we've had triple-digit weather since summer. July 3rd, July 4th, July 5th of 2012.
That kitchen I work in is going to get real hot, Matt.
Nate, we are
talk about global warming.
We are officially...
They don't think about people working in kitchens.
We are entering...
Global scorching in that kitchen.
John McClane, beginning of Die Hard 3 hot.
Oh, also the sort of hot where the Predator might come. Because famously, the Predator only comes when it's really hot.
Yeah, that's true too.
Summertime gets dangerous.
Man, I hope it ain't a Predator attack.
I mean, I would prefer a Predator attack to me having to walk around with a sandwich board that has the N-word on it.
It's Northwest Indiana. I think you could get away easier
with
that.
I feel like they'd drop me off in Gary specifically.
Oh,
I don't imagine
yeah,
me doing
no,
it around
okay.
A,
that's fair.
Some sort of gated enclave full of white yuppies or anything.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, Predator.
That would be no good for me.
Gotta watch out. Hey, it's the baby oils and the blows.
That's right.
And it's a... action extravaganza,
as always.
Explosion cast in your eardrums with two hosts.
Pa-pow, poo-poo.
Matto.
Two for the price of one.
And.
Worth every penny you pay.
You are the Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy's Iron?
To my Hans Gruber.
Oh, perfect.
You That's, are Nate Adams.
That makes us blood related.
Yep.
In this scenario. Ahoy, hoy, everybody. It's good to be here. Heat's not bothering me. I got the AC cranked.
Ugh.
Keep it like a meat locker in this fucking podcast studio. You hear that buzzing in the background? This is the AC. That's great.
Oh, okay.
Perfectly comfortable right now.
Somebody planted, maybe Tommy Lee Jones broke into your house bombs.
I wouldn't mind having like a kiddie pool or like a Crocodile Mile set up out back or something. That would really step up my game here.
I mean,
but
it would kill the lawn, but well worth it.
Yeah, I mean, probably get rid of that stuff and put down some pea gravel or something anyways. Yeah. Why am I out there mowing the grass every week like a sucker? Suburban life.
Whatever happened to suburban living?
I gotta tell you what's really weighing on me. The summertime is not this heat. It's these summertime outdoor cookouts and stuff.
Yeah.
Grad parties and barbecues, Matt.
Oh.
Well, I had a hard time recovering from that party we went to yesterday. Not because we went crazy or anything.
No.
Nothing weird happened.
No.
This is a day sitting around in humidity just drinking gallons of domestic beer.
Oh.
It doesn't get you drunk. Just makes you full. You're just eating like a bunch of grease heavy, like, you know, like sausages and fried chickens and whatnot. It's delightful in the moment, but the next morning, ugh. I've had like three or four just unsettling poops so far today.
Yeah.
This has been no good for me.
I've been starving myself lately, so I'm not pooping a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I
guess that's what happens.
Because my body's just holding on to everything.
Body shutting down, yeah.
But I'm getting shredded. It's well worth
it's gonna be great.
I rode one of them city scooters for the first time today.
Oh yeah? Which of the 10 companies that Chicago has got scooters for did you get on?
I rode a Bird.
Oh, a Bird. Wow.
Yeah.
What's your review of the scooter platform?
They are deceptively fast, and really seems like something I would hurt myself
for. I've heard that there's already lawsuits out there that allegedly some of them are going way faster than they're supposed to be capped to be able to go at. And some people have already hurt themselves pretty bad.
That 15 miles they advertised felt pretty swift as I was...
Fucking loser tourist downtown can't even handle being on the fucking bike shares, let alone giving them electric scooters. This is going to be a disaster.
Oh, yeah. Like, I... Well, I don't know what the word would be, but I pride myself, I guess, would be the word. As someone who has a good deal of experience with Chicago traffic.
And also riding scooters.
Well, hell yeah. But, like, I know my way around the city. I know what streets got to watch out for, you know. Then we were in the West Loop, pretty busy area.
Sure. These days. Boy, that neighborhood's turned around in the past 15 years, hey?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All I could think of was, like, man, if I wasn't from here and just riding one of these scooters...
Oh, fucking disaster.
Just be blindsided by a car and just murdered.
Smaller markets with more mellow thoroughfares. That's where a scooter program like this could operate. This is not good. Not
Chicago
good the windy
too
city.
Cutthroat, yeah. Saw him in Detroit. That makes sense. There wasn't a whole hell of a lot going on there.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Yeah.
Matt, we got an overstuffed movie to talk about here, so we should probably keep this banter short and
this
really get into the meat and potatoes.
Nice out. This bird is stuffed, Nate.
A little rundown here. We'll have the rundown.
We didn't even say what movie we're talking
this
about.
This week it's brought to us by, what's it going to be brought to us by?
Bird Rental Scooters.
Rental Scooters? Okay. They're the,
download the app,
they're the
folks.
One of the 10 that we want to survive out there. All those other scooters, they're getting thrown in the fucking lake. The rundown is of 1994's True Lies, released 25 years ago this week. True Lies has a runtime of 141 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh, boy.
It's a lot of
minutes. Budget, $115 million, which is... This is the first movie that cost over $100 million to make, Matt. This is a fucking milestone here.
It looks like
this movie looked like nothing else had ever been released.
Between what's going on the screen and the star power in this movie, I'm not the least bit surprised.
Not a failure of an experiment, though. Made $146 million domestic, $232 worldwide for a whopping $378 million in total.
That's
gross.
Triple the cash, folks.
Who's got the balls to put together a project like this? Our fucking director, James Cameron. He's a legend. You know him because he directed Piranha 2, The Spawning.
James Cameron and the now defunct company, Fox 25th Century.
Oh, man. Pour some out for those assholes. Sucked up by Disney just like everyone else eventually will. Soon all restaurants are going to be Taco Bell. Soon all entertainment's going to be Disney. Oh, yeah, that Fox fanfare, it's in the toilet. The stars of this movie, number one, the reason we're here today, the next big pillar in our July action movie Mount Rushmore. First, we started off with Stallone. Now we're going into Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's playing secret agent and family man Harry Trasker.
Tasker. You crazy asshole.
Extra R in here in my notes. He's the biggest action movie star of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Terminator. He's the former governor of California.
He's Jack fucking Slater.
Fucking Mr. Olympia and shit.
Jack fucking Slater.
He's Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know who he is.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, another great man. Another great man. You know what I think it is? I think it comes down to the way he talks. You know? That dude should be unloading trucks in Transylvania. That should have been the height of his success. But because he's a great man, he had the balls to move to America. Became famous for lifting weights. I lift weights, nobody gives a shit. He lifts weights, becomes super famous. Did he rest on his laurels? No, next challenge. I'm gonna become an actor despite the fact that nobody can really understand me. Against all odds, he starts making movies. Get down, there's a bomb, get out of there. Becomes one of the biggest blockbuster stars of all time. What are you gonna do next, Arnie? I think I'm mad at you, Kennedy. There's no fucking way you can do that. Bam, he does it. Cherry on top, I'm running for governor of a state I can't even pronounce, and he wins the election. This dude has been in the zone for over 4 decades. 4 decades, nothing but net.
Jamie Lee Curtis is playing his wife, Helen Tasker. She's got no idea that her husband's living a double life as a boring suburbanite and also an international super spy.
Ooh.
Fucking Jamie Lee Curtis was Laurie Strode in Halloween. That's how we knew her originally.
Oh.
We saw her boobs in Trading Places. That's how we grew to love her. You fucking know who Jamie Lee Curtis is. Boobs looked tremendous.
So does her penis.
Those are some weird rumors going around. Born a hermaphrodite, I hear.
That's what they say.
That's internet lore or something she's addressed.
She's got both parts.
Either way, I'd go after it.
Yeah.
Tom Arnold is playing the guy in the van, the dude who's behind the dude who does all the secret agenting. This is a cliched character that's in a lot of these movies, but...
Gibb.
Albert Gibson, a.k.a. Gibb. He's most famous for having an insane marriage to Roseanne Barr in the 1990s.
Yeah. Jenny Craig. This is a true story. Jenny Craig hired myself and my ex-wife, offered us $10 million to lose 20 pounds. Who could not lose 20 pounds for $10 million? I can think of two fat fuckers that had a real hard time with it. I'll tell you what, they just come out with these new Jenny Craig ice cream bars. They taste just like the regular ones. So I was eating like 30 of those for breakfast. And then we'd have a buffet at Jenny Craig's stuff at lunch, at Jenny Craig at dinner. And then about a week later, I'm like, Rosie, this is weird, but I think I'm gaining weight on Jenny Craig. It turns out, it's one meal per meal. It's, we got it wrong, but, you know, I said, oh, my God, this is horrible. People already think we're insane. We have got to do this. We can build another school. We got to do this thing. Plus, I'm 6'2". I weigh 280. You're 5 foot tall. You're 180. I'm not a scientist. But we could probably afford to lose 20 pounds. You know what I'm saying? I'd say, I tell you what, 24-7, me and you, baby. We're going to do this thing. I'll be like your sponsor. You're my sponsor. We pounded fists, done deal. The very next day, I walk into the kitchen. She's sitting there eating a bag of Jenny Craig chocolate chip cookies. I do what any good sponsor would do. I crushed the bag. And you know how in the kitchen, you got that island, and on the island, you got a block of wood, and you got a bunch of knives in it. You see that scar right there? That's a 20-year-old butcher knife scar.
Probably doesn't get his due for being a strong comedic actor because he's always been seen as a second banana.
And showing his ass on TV.
Yeah, and his huge drug problems of the past. That's probably factored in too, but really leaned into that second banana thing here because him and Schwarzenegger together, that's something right there.
You can see him on the Paramount network, I think, now with his hit series.
He's got a series?
It's
2019?
It's him trying to find the hidden Donald Trump tapes.
Like the P tape?
I don't know.
The Russian P tape?
Whatever. Right. I don't know.
I wish Tom Arnold well.
Hidden Trump tapes, and he's on the prowl to find
them. Tia Carrera is playing our sexy, sultry villain. She's a very sophisticated dealer in art and arms. Not really arms, antiquities, really. The arms is something that's hidden. You're not supposed to know about that. Spoiler alert, she's teaming up with some Middle Eastern terrorists to smuggle a bunch of nuclear warheads into a bunch of old statues and shit. What a bitch. You know her because she was Cassandra in Wayne's World. And if you've been following along with this podcast, like you should have, we saw her boobs in Showdown in Little Tokyo. And it was tremendous. One more little shout out I'm going to do here in our stars section. Charlton Heston does a cameo.
As Nick Fury.
Playing Spencer Trilby.
Oh.
The head of Omega Sector, which is the elite group of fucking operatives that includes people such as that skinny guy who hangs around and fat Tom Arnold. This guy's super elite. Either way, Charlton Heston, he was the gas station guy from Wayne's World 2. I think he might have done some other stuff. It was cool to see him, even though he just showed up for a couple of scenes.
Yeah, to play Nick Fury.
Also, the guy who played the main terrorist. He plays a terrorist.
Something Malik?
Avi Malik? I don't know.
Ari Malik?
Every once in a while you see him in something playing a terrorist and you're like, oh yeah, that's the guy who played the terrorist in True Lies too.
Yeah.
Tagline, when he said I do, he never said what he did.
Clever girl.
Yeah, keeps you guessing. Plot, the plot of this movie, a little synopsis. Harry Tasker is a secret agent for the United States government. For years, he has kept his job from his wife, but is forced to reveal his identity and try to stop nuclear terrorists when he and his wife are kidnapped.
When he and his wife are kidnapped.
A lot more going on than that. We got 141 minutes of movie to address, so let's take that plot synopsis and flesh it out a little bit here in our next segment. As always, we're going into bullet points, where we troll through our notes and hit all these bullet points, these talking points that stood out to us when we watched the film. Matt, how would you like us to begin it?
Much like the films we have discussed the past few weeks, a blown away, a cliffhanger, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
This movie right here, True Lies.
The last two.
True Believers. This movie, True Lies.
See Baby Oil and Blow, episodes 87 and 88. Excelsior.
Just like those other movies mentioned, this movie, no exception to the rule here, like all great action movies should, has a tremendous opening scene.
Is there any other way to do an action movie? You gotta start it off with action.
You walk up. When you're doing a real action movie, you walk up to the table, you unbutton your pants, you pull the zipper down, and you put your dick right on the table. You just put your dick right on the table.
This is
what we're working with, folks. Look at it.
If you're not in the first 10 minutes, you're probably not going to get in.
Yeah. Oh, maybe you this need isn't to hook for people. This isn't for you. But this is. This is for you. This is for everybody. I can remember loving this movie. My brothers loved it. Mm-hmm. My parents loved it.
This is a great movie to watch with dads. Because this movie
fucking comes out swinging. They're like, there's fucking Arnold. Ooh, that's Tom Arnold. He's a little racy. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's kind of funny. It's a little adult. They're like dancing and shit. I guess mom's into that.
I'm used to laughing but there's at explosions. But he seems to be in on the joke this time. This is weird.
Oh, how about a little sex pot named Tia Carrere?
So we got Schwarzenegger. This is my first bullet point addresses. We got a not your ordinary Arnie in this opening scene. Instantly, he's defying your expectations. You know this guy is just the mumble-mouthed big fucking boulder of a foreign man. Just like the fist busting through walls, just... He's a physical presence. This opening scene, we got him being just like slick and stylish.
A real James Bond
type. Showing up to the fancy party to fucking case it out in a tuxedo. He's speaking a bunch of different languages immediately. He eyes Tia Carrere being all fucking like rich and evil, and he's like, I'm going to show all these people how fucking suave I am and get in their inner circle by tangoing with her in a high-profile way. Suavemente fucking plays, and these two start tangoing the shit out of each other. She's a physical specimen too. They're turning every head in the goddamn room, and this isn't fucking, you know, the robotic Terminator. This isn't fucking John Matrix driving pickup trucks down mountains. This is fucking a whole new Schwarzenegger, and I'm loving it. He's pulling off the James Bond thing with aplomb.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, he's already got his guy in the van barking in his ear the entire time, Tommy Arnold.
Well, you gotta stop tangoing. We got important info to extract from blah, blah. This is the thing that always happens with these spy movies, is that like once they actually start talking about like what they're trying to find and why they're trying to find it, I never pay attention to those parts. So one of the things I really like about this movie is you basically just move from big action set piece to big action set piece, and all that stuff with the acronyms and the files and whatever. It's
really just kind of ancillary.
You don't have to. Yeah. Like, looking back, I have no idea what he was trying to get at this party, but I don't care.
It doesn't
matter.
I think I hit about like the halfway point of this movie, and I was like, what's the plot here again? And I was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It's just, let's get to the next big action set piece. That's what I'm here for.
Schwarzenegger's the good guy. He's not being completely upfront with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
There's bad guys.
So he's at this party.
I just laid out the whole movie for you.
Explosions start happening. There's like evil guys there with machine guns. They start shooting at him, machine gun style. Fucking, he's trying to run out of this place with whatever he's stolen from it. Some sort of microfilm, or I don't even fucking know what sort of technology we had going on in 1994.
Stole some kind of database off of their computer that was running Windows 3.1.
We get a sweet Die Hard 2-esque scene where we got dudes with fucking machine guns on snowmobiles chasing his ass. We got attack dogs coming at him, and he hilariously slams their heads together Three Stooges style when they lunge for his throat. And this is the first little glimpse of just like, hey, we got some physical comedy going on mixed in with this action. This movie is hitting us on multiple levels. Like, it's defying my expectations. It's making me giggle, but it's still showing me fucking dudes on snowmobiles with machine guns.
Well, don't
so
forget,
it's thrilling.
After he smashes the dogs' heads together and they whimper and hit the ground, he goes, stay.
He's got his classic Arnie fucking one-liners, but also he's got somebody to banter against. It's not just him talking to the camera, because him and Tom Arnold always got this earpiece microphone thing going, and in stark contrast to the terrible, forced, generic banter that Rooker and Stallone were doing last week when we were watching fucking Cliffhanger.
It felt pretty natural to me.
These guys, they're charming. They're fucking funny. They've got great chemistry together.
Yeah.
And just, it's outstanding. It's just listening to them be buddies.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another movie where Schwarzenegger's got a buddy who's like on his fucking level. It's new shit for him.
Eraser.
Is him and the crocodile? Is that his buddy in that one?
I don't remember anything about Eraser
him and
except
the,
that gun.
The future gun?
The
that
future
was,
gun.
Yeah, him and the future gun had great chemistry. Yeah.
Future gun, come on! Future gun, grab my hand.
So once we get all this shit done, we get our opening action scene out of the way, this is when we get our next, our glimpse at his home life. We got a young Eliza Dushku as his teenage daughter.
Yeah.
We get Jamie Lee Curtis as his sort of mousy fucking wife.
Yep.
He's getting done with all this adrenaline pumping action, and then he's trying to sit down to like a normal, pleasant, suburban
dinner. Before he even steps foot in the house, his main man, his buddy, Gib, Tom Arnold, is giving him a rundown. He's making sure he's got all his proper identification back as Harry Tasker. He's got the wedding ring, which he almost forgets. He's giving him gifts for the kids, just kind of giving them like a...
Because he's terrible at being a husband and a father.
Yeah, like, here's your
not
cover.
Not a good husband, not a good
here's
father.
Here's your cover story. And we're like, cover story?
Keeps what telling us that he loves his wife and loves his daughter. We don't see it in his actions.
We're like, what does he need a cover story for? And then he goes in there.
Seems much more alive when he's out killing terrorists.
Turns out he's been telling his old lady he's a computer salesman.
20 years now they're married. She's
computer
got no
software,
idea.
Computer software, he says.
Which is another one of my bullet points that I wanted to bring up is the sort of short shrift that Jamie Lee Curtis gets for 2/3 of this movie. Because she's got a big starring role in a big, expensive movie, sure, but God, it's another one of these thankless female roles for a large part of it, because not only is she once again saddled with these 90s women's hairstyles, which are just completely unflattering, and her early hairstyle in this film might be one of the most unflattering ever, which, to a purpose, because she does go through a bit of a transformation later where she goes from the frumpy housewife to more of a sex pot.
But, ooh, tell me more.
Man, they really didn't need to frump her out this bad. She's swimming in baggy 90s clothes.
I can
paint us a
spell
picture.
It for you real quick. She's straight up Jill Taylor in this bitch.
Oh, she Jill Taylored the fuck out of this movie. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Not only is she not getting to strut her stuff as a Hollywood starlet physically, but just as far as the role she's playing, she's got to look like such a dumb idiot through most of this movie. She doesn't know that her husband's literally traveling all over the world and has been for 20 years. Yeah. Then there's a little subplot that bubbles up where we find out she might be having an affair with some sort of Lothario, and Schwarzenegger's got to look into that. And
what?
Then we got to realize, oh, she's been buying all of this guy's fucking bullshit lines, hook, line, and sinker, so she just looks like a real idiot in that respect. Yeah. Finally, in the last third of the movie, even though she is still playing a classic damsel in distress, she does get to start showing a little bit of backbone and start mouthing off to people and getting involved physically a little bit, so it had to be a little bit more fun, but... Another thankless role for the females, which is a constant theme on this show.
So after the big opening scene, Schwarzenegger and Tom Arnold are like, hey, Charlton Heston, pretty sure...
Here I am.
Pretty sure there's some terrorists.
Wearing an eye patch. And tell me, like, who are
he's
they?
Like,
why are we going after
he's them? Like, young man, there's terrorists all over. Why are these ones terrorists?
Gordon Street.
And they're just like,
kill a terrorist who lived on Gordon Street.
Yeah, they're just like, I don't know, bro. Like, you weren't
a long time ago.
You weren't there. Like, we saw it
when,
like,
I was a young man.
I think there's terrorists, and he's like, you got to give me more than that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Says like, when we get one of these exposition dumps, it's like, hey, weasel little curly-haired IT guy, come out and show us some files. Tell us who these bad guys are. This is all just an excuse to get us to our next big action set piece,
right.
Which we're not even out of the first act yet, and we're going into our next big fucking action set piece, which is even better than the first one.
So Tia Carrere, you know, her and Arnie have a little back and forth in the big opening scene, and she's like,
he's trying to pretend like he's some sort of dude who's interested in buying art and statues
she's like,
and shit.
Come see me when I'm in Rome. And they run her name in the database, too. And they're like, oh, turns out she's actually in Washington, D.C. for no reason.
That little scamp.
And they're like, well, let's go pay a visit. So they go pay a visit. And then they're like, okay, that's cool. No big deal.
A little flirty.
But
little information exchange.
Turns out there's some people working with Tia Carrere that aren't on the level.
And they're terrorists. You're clearly just beefy terrorist goons.
And so they're like, hey, we got to follow Schwarzenegger.
Start following these guys around.
I don't think this guy is who he says he is.
And they're following us around. We're getting some espionage. We got cameras everywhere. People are in vans. Eventually, this leads us to just like Schwarzenegger and these guys doing cat and mouse deal. He's got an eye on them. They've got an eye on him. Eventually, it comes to a head in a public bathroom. And my next bullet point is how much I love action movies that give us a solid fucking bathroom fight.
Yeah.
Where people just tear the fuck out of a bathroom.
Right.
Smash every piece of porcelain in them. Just water spraying everywhere.
Like our
geysers up.
Like our old buddy the Boz did. God rest his soul.
Oh, yeah. You know? Rest in peace. He ripped that sink off the wall.
R.I.P.D. to the sink and Boz.
And then later died because such a lifestyle is not sustainable. And we learned that when Schwarzenegger kills a couple of these fucking guys.
Yep.
And what's maybe one of the best action movie bathroom scenes ever.
Yeah,
I have to start bringing in bathhouse scenes to think of anyone that
but
I
those
like
are,
as much. And
those are completely different.
I agree.
It's a whole different
atmosphere.
We're going
to get into those.
There.
We're going to cover plenty of movies with bathhouse scenes. Right now I'm talking bathroom scenes.
Yeah, bathroom scene is different because it's like the bathhouse, it's weird, and they're all like, there's a vulnerability because everybody's exposed.
Everybody's
like,
usually naked in them.
Naked or in a
great
towel. Like, bathrooms also vulnerable, but like, common bathroom etiquette in America is just like, you don't acknowledge anything.
Sure.
You just, everybody's eyes forward. And so,
I don't even want anybody to think for a second that I might have caught a glimpse of their penis.
Yeah. So it's a
weird bathroom fight could fucking break out.
It allows you to, like, flash a gun to your homie to be like, yeah, I'm going to shoot this guy and think that Arnold Schwarzenegger doesn't see you.
Not only do we get fisticuffs
while he's
here,
whistling Edelweiss at the urinal,
we get gunplay, so everything's shot up. People's heads get slammed through sinks.
Yep.
Another great thing that happens in bathroom scenes is there's usually somebody who's just innocently in there trying to shit.
Yep.
And we get an old man shitting and reading the newspaper while this stuff's going on. He hears people getting slammed into walls. He hears machine gun fire. He's just trying to fire one out.
Yeah.
A lot more comedy working in here. It sort of climaxes when there's a big guy Schwarzenegger's having problems putting away, so he just rips a hand dryer off the wall.
Which is a boss move.
Brutally beats this guy's head in with the fucking hand dryer.
Such a cool move.
Caving in his goddamn skull.
And then sticks his head in the urinal and flushes it and says, cool off or something.
He's got another one-liner here. I really should have kept track of them as they went out.
Either way, main terrorist guy comes
in
at this point.
Main terrorist doesn't die. He's waiting for their goons to take him out. He sees that dude has not been taken out, and then this leads directly into a foot chase.
Yeah, after he saws up the entire bathroom with like a Russian AK.
Hell yeah. Fucking hell yeah.
Schwarzenegger narrowly escapes.
Foot chase leads into terrorist guy ripping a dude off a motorcycle. He gets on that. Schwarzenegger then rips a fucking mounted cop off of his fucking horse. He gets on that. And then we got a horse chasing a motorcycle through crowded streets, through the park. It's
the way it should be.
Going down in crowded places. People are screaming and running everywhere. This is big budget fucking a lot of money getting spent shit. And once again, we're not even out of the first act of this film yet.
No, another big scene here. What I want to talk about in this specifically right here, this scene, it's a theme throughout the entire movie, but let's bring it up now. The practical stunts in this film.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Man, so...
Also, we're living in a pre-digital age right here, mostly.
Mostly. You get a little couple CGI.
This is the last dying gasp of really building things
right,
and really having stuntmen going on, seeing shit on screen that's really fucking happening in some form or another.
So before terrorist guy gets the motorcycle, he runs out of the building and runs right into the traffic. And, you know, it's not computer cars magically missing him.
No,
he runs into traffic, gets hit by a car, tumbles over it.
That's some little brown stuntman taking a hit by a car.
Gets back up. Yeah. Why? To make it look fucking real. Because when you run into a crowded street like that, you're probably going to get hit by a car. That's smart.
There's one thing going on in here that you got to throw some criticism about is that this movie in particular takes like no great pains to hide the fact that like Schwarzenegger's stunt devil and Schwarzenegger, like, it's always clear as fuck whenever they're switching back and forth between them and True Lies. Like,
but
they got the camera zoomed in way too much on this fucking stunt devil a lot. But I'll take it. I'll take that rather than a dude in front of a fucking green screen just reacting to digital nothing that's not really there.
Schwarzenegger does do a surprising amount of the horse work, though.
I imagine he's raised on a horse farm back in Austria, so I imagine he's got a lot of experience with this shit.
He credited the filming of Conan the Barbarian.
Okay, that makes more sense because I made up that horse farm in Austria thing, so that wasn't a real fact.
That sounded plausible, though.
I thought so, and I came up with it. It sounded real good.
Yeah, no, he said his filming of Conan gave him the experience he needed for the horseback riding.
Well, there's a stay tuned right there. We definitely got Conan coming up on our schedule. Yeah. We'll get a little taste of what he was doing in that film.
What about the sequel that didn't star him? Kevin Sorbo's Cole the Conqueror.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I thought he was in the Destroyer as well. Cole the Conqueror. We'll get it in there somehow.
Okay,
we'll get it in there.
Good. You got to.
This chase eventually, implausibly, leads to the rooftop of a fancy hotel. They're both still on the horse and on the motorcycle.
Right.
This is the fucking level of crazy
shit. All the way up the elevators.
Another bit of comedy I really liked when they're running through the lobby of this thing. You got some sort of like fucking little dork playing some smooth jazz sax.
Yeah.
And like dude flies by in a motorcycle and he like no-sells it. And it's just like, I'm self-important. I'm playing my sax. I can't react to that. But then he just fucking like loses his shit when a fucking horse comes barreling into him.
Yeah.
He does a nice like spit take, but into his saxophone, creating wacky saxophone noises.
Sounds kind of like a horse noise. He's like,
the fucking way this terrorist gets away. He gets on the roof. He revs up his fucking engine just as fast as he can, goes to the edge of the roof, blasts through the fucking glass railing separating this rooftop fucking patio from a plunge to the depths. He makes it all the way across the street. Classic person jumping off a roof, landing in a pool scene. Another fucking awesome thing you need to fit into any action movie you're making.
Absolutely.
He gets away, because Schwarzenegger, his horse ain't making this jump, man.
Well, not for a lack of trying on Schwarzenegger's.
We do get a little thing where he tries to make the horse jump, and then the horse chickens out, and he ends up dangling over the side of the skyscraper for an extra little bit of tension.
And then he calls the horse a bad cop.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's really our last big fucking action scene with these terrorists before we need to get into my next bullet point, which is the insane fucking structure of this movie.
Yeah.
Because at this point, a little bit of his sleuthing, this guy's a fucking spy. He starts picking up on the fact that he thinks his wife's been dodging him when he goes in to see her at lunch. She's getting weird phone calls. He starts thinking she has an affair. So this fucking movie we've been watching about this secret agent who's fighting terrorists comes to a screeching fucking halt.
Yeah.
And suddenly, we get this whole second movie where it's a secret agent who thinks his wife's cheating on him, so he starts using all of his secret agent connections and his whole team of secret agents to try and catch her fucking cheating on him. And this is like the next 40 minutes, and we don't hear from the terrorists again. The terrorists aren't spoken of. And this is where Bill Paxton comes in, Matt.
Yes!
So, I don't know. Tell us a little bit about what Bill Paxton's doing in this movie.
This whole sequence, this whole next part of the movie here, like you said, James Cameron realizes what he has here, and that is solid gold. Mm-hmm. Instead of just blowing through it real quick, he's like, fuck it, let's give it 40 minutes, let it breathe, walk it around a little bit, see how it feels. I also love the fact that, like you said, Schwarzenegger's like, I think my wife's cheating on me, fuck it, I'm going to use all my spy ability and power to like find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And instead of everybody just being like, yeah, we're going to find out, we'll help you because you're our friend.
Uh-huh.
Tom Arnold's like, bro, I've been divorced three times.
He's playing a total sleazebag here.
He's like, it's bound to happen.
Schwarzenegger's heartbroken.
You just got to let it go.
Man. And fucking the first thing Tom Arnold says to him when he hears his wife's been cheating on him is, welcome to the club, buddy.
Yeah. And he's just like, at least being the voice of reason, being like, yeah, we're going to get fired if you keep doing this shit.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that they set that up a little bit.
It's not so bad. Like, you know, she's keeping it like on the sly. Like, she needs this. My last chick took everything out of my house. She took the ice cube trays out of the freezer. What kind of sick bitch takes the ice cube trays out of the freezer?
Roseanne Barr.
There's a lot of meta stuff going on here with Tom Arnold. I'm loving it.
He's working through some things in
great
real life.
Great banter.
So they find out, they do some phone taps and whatever, and they find out that Jamie Lee Curtis is meeting up with the mysterious Simon.
Ooh.
Now, Simon, as we come to find out, is played by Mr. Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton meets her at a restaurant, and he's all like, yeah, I know, I told you, you know, I'm a spy, and like, my life depends on you, and I really need your help. I feel the heat's coming down on me. Oh, what's that? Oh, man, nothing's safe here. And he's just doing some great Bill Paxton work
real
here.
Real spy movie shit. Yeah. Real jittery. Always looking over his shoulder.
Because he is selling Jamie Lee Curtis the life that her husband is really living.
Oh, yeah. And could be given to her.
Yeah.
But ain't. So she's a fucking empty husk of a woman. Because he's always got to pretend like he's this boring piece of shit. He's an empty husk of a man because now he knows that his fucking wife isn't loyal to him. There's some more great comedy there where he knows that she didn't, that she left work and met a man during lunch.
Yeah.
So he asks her about it at the dinner table to see what she's going to say. And then the camera just zooms in on his eyes getting real serious as if we're in like this real fucking spy scene and he's trying to extract information from a fucking bad guy.
And there's a lot of Schwarzenegger facial
things
in this
movie. They're really relying on him to be like, a physical comedian throughout this whole thing.
Even in that beginning scene, like there's some things where he's like bullshitting his way through that party and he like, you know, he's like, oh yeah, we're having a great time. And then he turns away from those characters and like the camera picks up and he's just like dead serious look. And it's like, yeah, you're really working on acting here, Schwarzenegger.
Like when he's pretending like he's taking his little rat dog out for a walk.
Yeah.
But he's really just like out in the rain. I don't know.
So
like,
they could bug.
Yeah, just get a
Jamie Lee Curtis's
put on
purse.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
So they could hear.
The little rat dog can't keep up with his Terminator walk. Because at this point, he's just like a single-minded fucking machine trying to find out what's happening with his wife. And he just keeps getting jerked like 2 feet in the air and yelping like every two fucking huge Austrian god strides that he takes.
Yeah.
Great physical comedy from
Good
that
stuff.
Dog.
Good
he was,
stuff.
He was a great little actor.
Until Schwarzenegger killed the dog on the set, I assume.
That's another factoid that may or not be true. Look it up. You can't rely on us for everything.
So anyways, they're like, all right, we got to find out about this spy guy, Simon. So they tail him, you know. Mm-hmm. She separates from him. They tail him back to where he works or claims to work, and lo and behold,
what's real, what's not?
He's not a spy at all.
Oh no,
he's a used car salesman.
Big fucking twist. This guy, fucking your wife, is a used car salesman using your real life to fucking get in her pants. This is insult on top of injury.
They're the exact mirror of each other, Nathan.
And I mean, like, you talk about,
he's
like
a spy claiming to be a salesman. He's a salesman claiming to be a spy.
It's a cliche to have the used car salesman be the sleazy, slimy character, like, in a thing. It's an old fucking joke. After fucking our old boy Kurt Russell did it so well in Used Cars, like, they probably should have put a pin in that joke.
Say, this your $10? You know, I saw it floating underneath the car. I picked it up. Here you are, Mr. What's your name?
Stanley Dowalski.
Polish, eh? What a coincidence. Rudy Polanski, how are you? Hey, I like that watch, Stan. Great shoes. Love them.
Thanks.
So, Stan, you want to buy this Buick Centurion, huh? Good choice. Smart man, you got good taste. I'll tell you something a lot of people have these days. Nice to see somebody finally walk on this lot who knows a good car when he sees one, I'll tell you. So, we read it up?
Yeah, well, actually, I was just looking.
Oh, hey, terrific. Terrific. That's what we're here for, Stan. Here you can look, browse, peek, touch, feel, taste, smell, do anything you want, take all the time you want. Nobody's going to pressure anybody around here, Stan. You know something, though, Stan? I really think you ought to buy this Buick.
Mm-hmm.
I think you ought to buy it today, right now. You want to know why? Because this Buick is you. The color is you. Look at it. This is your car. Stanley Dowalski is Buick Centurion Convertible. Now, I know what you're thinking, Stan. You're thinking, can I afford to buy a car like this? Huh? Am I right? Seriously, Stan, you can't afford not to buy a car like this, and I'm going to make it easy on you. When you add this whole thing up, taking into account inflation rate, insurance savings, gas savings, ease and comfort, you're going to come out $10,000 ahead after making this deal. Well, the prestige alone of owning a Buick Centurion Convertible can't even be measured in terms of dollars and cents. Am I right?
94, it's hackneyed, but it doesn't matter because Bill Paxton is so good being a sleazeball in this movie that every fucking thing he says is so goddamn hilarious.
So they follow him to the car lot, and Schwarzenegger immediately is like, well, fuck it, I'm going to act like I'm buying a car.
He rolls in there pretending like he's in the market for the fancy vet. Is it a convertible Corvette?
Oh, yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly, that he's driving around in his spy life, because it's just something that's on his fucking lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is good shit. So Schwarzenegger gets in the car doing a test drive and instantly just starts fucking with him.
Yeah, and this might be Paxton's best work.
I think it's my favorite role he did in anything ever.
I mean, like, he gets a lot of people bring up, like, Game Over Man. Yeah, was that Kennedy? Did he play Kennedy or in Aliens? Whatever
seen
it was
one recently enough to pull up specific character names.
But yeah, Game Over Man. Get it? You know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of
very memorable performance.
Swearing in that, and he is great in that. Another, you know, clearly James Cameron gets the genius of Bill Paxton.
Definitely,
he has him play a mealy mouth little dork.
Oh, yeah.
In the first Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that movie, Cameron was like, stick with me, pal.
We're going to go places together.
Yeah. So Schwarzenegger's doing
the,
like,
let's face it, the vet gets him wet.
The vet gets him
everything wet. Everything he says is about pussy in this movie.
He's like, because
literally every line is about pussy.
Schwarzenegger starts needling him about, like, oh, you got any ones on the line right now? And, you know, of course, he starts talking about Jamie Lee Curtis, Schwarzenegger's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes on this fucking rant about, like, how she's so hot but doesn't know she's hot, and, you know, if she just lose the glasses, and she's
all
got
true lose this, that Jill Taylor look.
Yeah. Oh, the tits are just,
turn her
just
into a Tool Time girl,
amazing, and
pair of titties that make you want to stand up and beg for buttermilk.
Yeah,
ass like a 10-year-old boy. This is one of my favorite lines in any movie ever.
Yeah, it's so.
Nobody wrote that line. That's not in the fucking script.
That's got to be
that's
pure
Paxton riffing in that fucking car. You know that's fucking Paxton riffing. just trying to crack Schwarzenegger while they're doing this scene.
So Schwarzenegger punches him in the face, but doesn't really. He just dreams that he did and then snaps back to it, takes Paxton back, and then he's like, all right. We got to trap this fucker.
This B-plot hasn't gone on long enough.
We got to trap this fucker.
Are we going to get back to the A-plot? No. Another 20 minutes where I'm coming up with this elaborate thing where we're going to set up a rendezvous between him and my wife. Then we're going to crash it with all our real fucking spy shit.
And helicopters we're gonna and vans.
Chop her in. We're going to take them fucking both hostage. We're going to freak the fuck out of both of them.
Yeah. I wrote down there, what did I put? He really tortures his wife psychologically.
Yeah, yeah. So they take Paxton and they basically just act like they're going to kill him, which is great because then it gets... It allows him to do an acting turn where he goes from this smarmy, smug sleazeball to just the most sniveling, whimpering fucking little bitch ever.
Wait, you got the wrong guy. My name's Simon. Look, just let me go. There's no need to kill me. I haven't seen your face. No, I didn't see it. It's you. Hey. You still interested in that vet at all?
Hey, Carlos, the game's over. Your career as an international terrorist has been well documented.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, no.
Oh, yeah.
No. I sell cars. That's all. Come on. I'm not a terrorist. I'm actually a complete coward. If I ever saw a gun, I'd... Oh, God. Oh, please don't kill me. I'm not a spy. I'm nothing. I'm naval lint. I have to lie to women to get laid, and I don't score much. I got a little dick. It's pathetic. Oh, God. Oh, would a spy pee himself, huh? Oh, God.
I got a little dick, man.
He full on pees
pathetic.
Himself. Just pisses himself on screen. I imagine that's not special effects. You have Paxton in there. He's a pro. You just have him piss his pants for real.
That scene, though, where Schwarzenegger and Tom Arnold are interrogating him and he's
that's
pissing
right.
himself.
Yeah.
Just the looks these two keep flashing each other like they're being like, hard ass. And then like they look at each other and like crack jokes
and smiles.
This is actually
a lot of fun what we're doing right
oh.
now.
Oh, God.
Highly illegal. Just a blatant misuse of government properties, but I'm having a great time.
But the fucking buddy dynamic, that chemistry between Arnold is just fucking phenomenal, man. Like, oh, so good.
Give these guys a fucking sitcom on CBS where they're just private eyes, Arnold. I'll watch the shit out of that. I'll watch 10 seasons
private
of that shit.
Private eyes, I'm watching you. Are they going to use that as a theme song?
Probably, or at Good. Least some sort of takeoff of it. But yeah, they get rid of him. He's out of the movie. It was a very small role, but maybe my favorite side character in any movie I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
But then it gets kind of serious, because they do just have his wife in an interrogation room with fucking concrete walls and a double-sided mirror on one of them, and they're talking to her in like a garbled fucking, you know, like... informant
voice
on
scramble.
Fucking one of those FBI Most Wanted shows voice.
Tell me what you know.
And he's just he's tearing into her sexual history, just asking her if she still fucking loves, likes fucking her husband. Like,
did you fuck him?
How far she went
did
with
Bill him?
Paxton.
Did you blow him?
Turns out this movie is not going to get into too complicated relationship dynamics, because they make it clear that she did not have sex with him. She's not unfaithful. She did just think she was helping her country by going along with his stupid shit and shorts. She still loves her husband, even though...
Which is good to know.
Why the fuck would she? Because this guy, granted, he's fucking chiseled out of marble, but he's such a fucking drip when he's playing his computer salesman character.
I was
going to
use those exact
life.
Words,
like,
yeah.
What the hell? Like, you got to get rid of this guy, Jamie Lee Curtis. Your life's boring. It's miserable.
Fucking loser.
But even though this scene is weird and she does sort of have a psychological breakdown screaming and crying.
Yeah. It does, which Schwarzenegger's happy about.
Yeah, it does give him a turn where he's like, okay, I can see that my wife needs a little bit of excitement. So
I'm going to
further use my resources to create false scenarios.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to threaten
give her the excitement that she's craving.
I'm going to threaten her with imprisonment.
Kind of sweet.
And embarrassment to her entire family
kind
and community.
Psychotic. You know, you take the good with the bad.
Or she can pull a dangerous heist for the government.
Yeah. So then he gives her the task. If you want to get out of being thrown in jail, federal pound me in the ass prison. You got to do a little heist for us. this guy in this new fancy hotel is a real prevert.
Yeah.
He likes getting women in, and he makes them dance for him all sexy, and he likes to watch. And you got to go in there posed as the sexy dancer.
As the prostitute.
You got to put a bug on the table next to the bed by the phone, and if you don't do it, bitch, you're in jail.
Yeah. And so she's like, well, I guess I got to do what I got to do. Mm-hmm. And thank the Lord she does, because it gives us one of the most iconic parts of this movie,
mm-hmm.
and that is Jamie Lee Curtis's transformation of Jill Taylor.
That's right.
To titties showing prostitute.
Slicks that 90s hair back.
And
rips all the doilies off her dress.
Trading places,
leaving it into a little black dress. Strips down to some very skimpy black lace bra and panties.
Which were hers.
To this guy who she doesn't know who he is because he's sitting in the shadows. Turns out it's Schwarzenegger, and he's going to be like, "Eh, baby, it was me the whole time.
Now
let's do some fucking in this hotel.
It's me, Arnold Schwarzenegger."
But, you know, we get some comedic misunderstandings where she's beating his head in with the phone and kicking him in the ribs because she thinks he's just a pervert. And at this point, we've just been having this husband and wife back and forth thing for a good long time.
So in the dancing,
it's sort of a shock.
In the dancing scene here,
uh-huh.
when she falls off the bed and Arnold gets up real quick to help her, that wasn't in the script. That really happened.
That's a real fall.
And Cameron liked it and left it in there. And also, when Arnold drops the tape recorder.
Yeah.
He had
one of his spy buddies record a little script to tell him what to
do. Jean-Claude.
Dense sexy. Do it some more.
You think that was a shout out to JCVD?
Do it slow. I mean, I think probably it's a little tidbit. A lot of people don't know this, but they really did have JCVD record that.
Oh, it's my mistake.
Look it up. Bing it.
It makes sense, though. Also, they're originally going to have Jamie Lee Curtis go nude for this scene.
Ooh, that would have been too much, I think. I think tonally that would have been weird for this sort of popcorn summer action thing.
Would I like to have seen it?
It was also kind of tonally weird that she did it in Trading Places, which was like a comedy. You don't usually get too many tits from like name actresses in comedies.
So anyways, this whole hullabaloo.
It gets interrupted because the terrorists bust back in. They're like, this is supposed to be a movie about terrorists. We want back in, man.
It's really how it plays. They're just like, y'all motherfuckers forget about us?
And you actually, as a viewer, kind of have forgotten about them.
Right.
So it's kind of a shock when they do burst into this hotel room, take Arnold and Jamie Lee hostage, and then it's just like, hey, we got big terrorist plans. We can't have you mucking them up, so we're going to kill you.
I have seen this movie many a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple years, but I've seen it a lot of times. And even I forgot that the hotel sex dance scene bridged it back to the terrorists.
That's right. And at this point, we've gotten through our first two acts. So we go structurally, once again, very weird. Nothing about this movie should work. We totally abandon this plot forever.
Yeah.
Second act takes forever. It's got nothing to do with the first act. Third act also weird because it like builds to like three different climaxes,
three
and ends like three different fucking times, and just keeps going and going and going, and you should hate it. You should be miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, ugh, what the fuck is this movie? But it all kind of works for me. I'm not mad at any point during this movie.
It's all fun. The first little hair-raising adventure is Helen and Harry are taken captive, and they gave him truth serum, and they're going to torture him, and they're not going to make it out of this one alive.
Super creepy little skinny old man gives him truth serum. I like the torture expert guy they got. He looked like a old Universal horror movie monster or something.
Yeah, he looked like a Middle Eastern Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of Hills Have Eyes mutant shit going on there.
So this is a fun little scene because Arnie gets pumped full of truth serum, and he's all like, you get drug eye cam where everything's all wonky and voices sound weird, and he's being slap happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some great shit. And she's like, he's like, ask me a question, I can allow to. And she's like, are we gonna die? And he goes, yep. Which is pretty funny.
Yeah, essentially he's just like, we're either going to get shot in the head or tortured to death.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't happen because fucking CD gets enough of his bearings to be like, all right, fuck this. I'm not going to die. The interrogator comes in. He's still got truth serum in him, so he just starts truthfully telling this fucking guy all the shit he's going to do to him. Like, I'm going to break through these restraints. I'm going to use you as a human shield.
Oh, he goes, I'm going to use you as a human shield.
Fucking kill all these other goons.
Then I'm going to kill that guard over there with that pick right there, and then I'm going to break your neck. And he's like, how are you going to do that? And he's like, I undid the cuffs.
Because I've undid my restraints! Yeah. And then it's just fucking murder. Yeah.
Murder.
And Jamie Lee and Schwarzenegger gotta get out of this compound, so...
Now, we've established guns,
there's explosions.
Hold on, because you're walking there's over fireballs. A big thing. You're walking over a big thing here that you probably didn't even notice. What did we say? This movie's how long?
141 minutes.
So that's 2 hours, 21 minutes. We've made it to an hour... and 40 minutes at this point into the movie, okay?
So that's we got 41 minutes left?
And you pointed out something at the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the Arnold we're used to, right? This is not the Arnold we're used
to
seeing.
During this sequence, we start getting some classic Arnold.
You know why?
He's just blowing everybody
because
away.
Because at an hour and 40 minutes into the movie, this is the first time Arnold Schwarzenegger picks up a fucking machine gun.
And he does a cool thing where he, like, stomps on a board and flips it up in the air and then catches it and immediately starts shooting. So it's just like, easing back into it.
It was just so weird to me because he kept using, like, small handguns throughout the entire movie, like some kind of government operative would. And it was like...
he's got to have the biggest gun in the movie.
It's just so weird seeing him.
Stallone got a fucking thing going. Who can have the bigger weapons?
Yeah.
You can get some big-ass guns in your hands. Another weird little thing that you sort of just gloss over watching this is that in this scene, fucking Jamie Lee Curtis, when she's strapped to this chair, she's got a fucking... just a hand grenade sitting on her twat.
Yeah.
It's just like, what the fuck is that? Yeah. So I looked it up and turns out there was... A whole fucking different scene that would explain that was fucking excised. So there's even more of this movie on the cutting room floor somewhere.
Yeah.
The director's cut, I don't know, might be like 3.5 hours or something.
It's Avatar long.
Oh, geez. Once the blue people start showing up and that third act climax, I had to check out.
So they finally escape. From Alcatraz here.
Yeah, he escapes, but she's still in their captivity.
Yeah.
So that brings us to our next big climax.
She thinks he's dead, too.
Where he's got to get back with Tom Arnold and get back with the U.S. government and be like, these guys got nuclear warheads. They're trying to blow up American cities. They got a bunch of generic terrorist demands. Yeah. But also they have my wife as a hostage. So we got to take care of this shit now because I love my wife. Even though I've treated her like shit through this whole movie, I assure you, I love my wife. So let's get out there and save her.
So they're on the old 7 Mile Bridge, leaving the Florida Keys back to the mainland.
Got nuclear warheads on trucks in this caravan. Fucking Jamie Lee's locked up in the back of a limo with Tia Carrera. Arnold Schwarzenegger's in a chopper with my man Tom Arnold.
I know this isn't the final boss scene, but... I think it's kind of the most important of the ending scenes.
Yeah, it's fucking cool as hell because they literally have fighter jets show up and start blowing up an entire real bridge with missiles.
Yeah.
That's how much money was spent on this movie. We're shooting missiles at bridges and blowing them up for real.
I don't know if they knew what they were doing or if they just got lucky and it timed out this way. Florida was in the process of building a new 7 Mile bridge. But
7 miles is a long bridge, ladies and gentlemen.
They had it built, but they didn't have all of the old 7 Mile deconstructed yet. But they had big chunks of it cut out so that tall ships could just float through without having to worry about bridges.
To the bus jump in Speed, where that sort of chunk of the highway just happened to be missing, and they were like, "Well, let's fucking do something with this.
Yeah, let's use this to our advantage." So big bridge, limo, chase scene, whatever.
Yeah, we got to stop these guys with the warheads, so we bring in the fighter jets, we blow up the bridge.
There is a boss scene here, I'm sorry, because it's finally Jamie Lee Curtis.
This is her time to shine, because fucking we're machine gunning all this shit.
Yeah.
The guy driving their limo gets fucking machine gunned to hell. He's dead.
Dead as fuck.
The car's still careening. The limo's careening at a high speed down the fucking 7 Mile Bridge, and this is when we get... our chick-on-chick catfight, which if you got more than one woman in an action movie, if they don't have a fucking woman-on-woman just fucking claws out catfight, yeah. What are you doing?
You're making a shit what movie. What are you doing? That's what you're doing. We've also slipped into, like, Tom and Jerry, Bugs Bunny slapstick at this point in the movie, too. Like, when Jamie Lee Curtis is going to help Schwarzenegger out and kill those guys with the MAC-10.
Yeah.
But she just drops it and it bounces down the stairs, shooting everybody to death.
Still killing everybody perfectly.
And like, I'm like, man, that's really cheesy. And then it's like, well, I guess I would prefer that as opposed to her just like randomly being able to shoot it really good.
Then contrasted by this catfight in the back of the limo, though, where she just takes a champagne bottle and beats Tia Carrera's skull in once again. Another brutal skull crushing.
Yeah.
So there's once again, I'm astonished at how we keep going back and forth from this slapsticky physical humor to just this brutal fucking violence. And I'm just not like, this movie makes no sense. I'm just like, keep bringing me more, movie. Everything's so much fun. I don't give a fuck.
Tom and Jerry conditioned you to feel that way.
I guess that's true, yeah.
A little bit of slapstick.
I was raised on extreme violence.
Extreme brutality.
Wacky comedy.
Either way, she knocks Tia Carrera out. She's like, I gotta get out of this limo.
It's careening towards the end of the bridge very quickly.
We get some tried and true Schwarzenegger here as he's approaching in the helicopter and he's doing the whole Schwarzenegger, come on, grab my hand.
Classic good guy hanging off that bottom part of a chopper that it lands on scene in an action movie. If you got a chopper, you got a good guy.
Yeah.
He's got to hang off that at some point.
To rescue somebody
else. She's coming out of the skylight of the limo. He's hanging off. Are they going to be able to touch hands? Is he going to be able to save her before she careens to her death? This is our second big climax of the third act. Of course, the last second when the limo's going over the edge. Finally, their hands meet. Limo goes flying, but she stays there. They're still just hanging off the bottom of a chopper over fucking water. It's still a deadly situation, but I breathed out. I took a moment to be like, oh, thank God.
Nate.
What's up?
Jamie Lee Curtis did that stunt herself.
I mean, it's a close-up on her face through this whole thing.
Her
so
birthday.
There's no way this you could have fucking faked this whatsoever. It's a point-of-view shot. Of a hand reaching down and her just doing all this shit. She's not only doing it, she's acting while doing it all.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Well, the first two-thirds of this movie, pretty thankless for her. She got to do some cool-ass impressive shit here at the end.
James Cameron asked her if she wanted to do the stunt. And she was like, yeah, I'll do the stunt. Where are you going to be?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to be hanging out of a helicopter with a handheld camera capturing it all. And she was like, oh, shit. Well, if you're willing to do it, I guess I'll do it.
So here, they've taken out the fucking one of the warheads. They've saved the girl.
Oh, yeah, there's nuclear warheads in the middle
it
of all this,
It seems like
too.
The movie should be over, but we got one more warhead. And then I think what we get is just one sort of wrinkle, one set piece too many. Not that it's not fucking awesome what happens next, but we find out that somehow they've figured out who Tasker is, whatever, and, like, gone. And these people at this point have been at least overnight leaving their daughter alone. But don't worry, because the terrorists have gone and kidnapped his daughter. So now not only do they have one more warhead in a building downtown, fucking whatever Florida town this is in, they also have his daughter there. So he's got to fucking hop up in one of these fighter jets and go
the Harrier,
fly over to this building so we can have one more huge action climax where the main terrorist guy dies and the girl gets saved and the nuclear weapon doesn't go off. I guess we have three, because one does go off in the distance as they do their reunion kiss.
That's
which is a great shot. Once he saves her from the limo, Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis, they embrace, they smooch, mushroom cloud in the background. That's
back where they just escaped from, because they buried that one in the concrete.
Yeah, that's right. So we got one that they took out on the bridge. We got one that's been set off as a warning off in like an unpopulated area. But now we've got one more in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
Third fucking action climax.
You got Eliza Dushku, 12-year-old Eliza Dushku playing a 15-year-old.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She's suspended. She's
very developed.
From a crane. She's doing
what's in the water these days.
Crazy stunts she's in this movie.
So early.
You're not the only person that thought that.
Oh, no?
Yeah, no. So did the stunt coordinator who molested her on the filming of this movie.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not great.
And then, like, somebody confronted him about it.
Uh-huh.
And she got injured right after that.
Right.
During a stunt.
Uh-huh.
Because he was like, you shouldn't open your big mouth.
Oh, fuck. That's a fucking dark layer to True Lies that I didn't know existed.
Yeah, yeah. So that probably kind of explains why Eliza Dushku never really got up and running, you know?
Hopefully that guy didn't go places after this, but I'm kind of thinking he probably did.
He probably did.
History has taught me anything, he probably fucking did. Yeah.
I didn't know there was a raping.
No. This has caught me unawares.
Underneath
this. This is a late plot twist right here.
I just had a M. Night Shyamalan-ya here.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, she's dangling from a crane. Mm-hmm. He's got a plane.
Once the terrorist is distracted, when he's filming his I'm going to blow up all this shit terrorist video, she goes and steals the key that he needs to launch the thing. So then he's chasing her. She gets once again to the roof of this building. She's out on a fucking construction crane. He's out there fucking climbing after her. It's very treacherous.
Mm-hmm.
Schwarzenegger shows up in his fucking fighter jet, blows away an entire fucking floor of a high rise with his machine guns.
Yeah.
They destroy a huge chunk of this building. And then he's got the fighter jet up there under the fucking thing. He's doing a lot of Schwarzenegger screaming, come on!
Come on!
You need to jump! I will catch you!
Just grab my hand, Dana!
It's very suspenseful.
Dana!
She's afraid to jump, but the terrorist is nipping at her heels. And eventually she does jump, or she just falls. And she's treacherously on the nose of this fighter jet. Terrorist is, to his credit, a great fucking terrorist. Because then he just jumps onto the back of this fighter jet, climbs up to the front, starts fist fighting the guy who's flying the fighter jet when they're in midair. Like, that's ballsy right there. She's dangling off the nose. She's going to fall at any minute. It's, oh my God, what's going to happen? Yada, yada, yada. We're fucking 2 hours and I don't know how many fucking minutes into this movie at this point.
Yeah, at least 10.
We got to wrap it up. So at least we do wrap it up with one of the coolest fucking bad guy deaths that's ever happened in any movie ever.
He, like, punches the bad dude, or he nudges him, or the plane bumps, I forget what it is, and he goes dick first into the fin of the plane.
Oh, yeah.
And slapstick.
Ooh-ee.
Ooh-ee-ee. Oh, my terrorist balls! And then slides off the edge of the plane, but his backpack gets hung up on a missile.
Fin of one of these missiles. He's just hanging from a missile.
And he realizes, like, oh, I'm not dead. I'm dangling from a missile.
And Schwarzenegger realizes, oh, I could see some of his goons in an attack chopper out in the distance.
And he puts one and one together, and that makes three.
And a three is the big quip of the movie. Classic Vince McMahon, you're fired.
You're fired, yeah.
You fired.
Trump stole that from Vince McMahon, everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want him to get any credit for nothing. Schwarzenegger says, you're fired. He shoots the missile. Bad guy's comically screaming while on a fucking missile that's getting missiled.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool scene.
He goes entirely through the fucking building.
Doesn't hit anything.
Blown away everything on that floor of the building. Flies out the other side. Hits his only remaining goons in the helicopter. We got everything wrapped up in a nice little package. They explode in a big, glorious ball of flame. Schwarzenegger got to quip. Bad guys are dead. All of the ladies in his family are saved.
Back to family.
No nuclear armaments were fucking set off.
Except for that one.
Last week, cliffhanger gave us no denouement, and we appreciated it. We were just like, bad guys dead, end credits, it's over. This movie, we're at like fucking 2 hours and 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
We do get a little denouement here. It's making me a little bit frustrated.
Yeah.
But we've established these characters enough to where it is something that's nice to see, because we get a little stinger at the end when it's like, oh, we're back to our family life. But, ooh, now we're getting a call from fucking Omega Sector, and Now we reveal that they're working together as a husband and wife secret agent duo. We get a callback from the first scene. They tango together because Tia Carrera can't tango because she's fucking dead somewhere in fucking the ocean in Florida. We get Bill Paxton back another time. He's now playing a waiter at this fancy party. He pees himself again.
Still spitting the same game.
I think it's a little bit too much here to call back Bill Paxton. He had a tremendous exit earlier. At this point, right. I'm like, fucking movie, let's wrap it up. I don't need a callback to everything that happened. Thankfully, credits roll. True Lies. It gave us so much great shit, but oh boy, did it give us a lot of it.
Yes, that's all true. Do we have any more?
I don't have anything else to add. I got through everything I wanted to address in my bullet points talking True Lies. I think my reactions are out there. Digest them as you will, my man.
What do I do after that?
Well, I want to hear everything you gotta say about this, and I want to hear what some of the fans out there have to say about this movie, too. So we're going to come back in our third and final segment. It's just going to be one fucking climax. It's not going to be three like this movie. Our third segment, as always. What's it called, Matt?
Terminator's The Judgment Day. Just Judgment Day.
Steven Seagal is Mason Storm, a cop working undercover. Until his cover was blown.
Whoever that is, I don't want him to get an hour older.
They thought they'd seen the last of him. But Mason Storm is hard to kill.
Mason!
Now.
He's toast, you understand?
The climate is right.
We'll get him, buddy.
For revenge.
Every one of them.
You better dial 911.
Mason Storm is about to hit back.
That wasn't the time. Now's the time.
We are going to put an end to violence, and you can take that to the bank.
Steven Seagal is hard to kill.
Take that to the bank.
Critics are calling Hard Target 100% action. A rocket-powered roller coaster. A supercharged blast of fireworks. With breathtaking, amazing stunts.
How's it feel to be behind that? You tell me.
Legendary director John Woo is a movie magician, and Jean-Claude Van Damme is the number one action hero in movies today.
He's obviously not someone we should underestimate.
Hard Target, rated R. Now play at theaters everywhere.
Also in that wheelhouse, passed by that Wahlburgers today. I forgot there's one of those.
By it?
Yeah, there's one of those.
There's
in
one
Chicago.
In our area. I had no idea.
Yeah,
there's
a Wahlburgers.
I'm gonna go fucking try it. Yeah. ASAP, motherfucker.
It's just like, hey, how you doing? I'm Mitchie Wahlberg.
You gotta talk in a dumb Massachusetts accent to work there? Is that kind of like the thing they do?
Probably.
It sounds just great. I'm a big Marky Mark fan.
Just why?
That guy's a fucking dumb idiot in a great way.
I don't want to get a burger from Mitchie Wahlberg. I want a burger from Donnie or Mark.
I heard that is a tasty burger.
Well, that's my criticism of Wahlbergs.
Okay.
You got criticisms of True Lies?
Got criticisms of True Lies. There's a lot of opinions.
Good or bad?
There's a little bit of a turn here. This one. I've got 2 1-star reviews like normal. And
okay.
2 5-star reviews like normal.
All but, right.
One 1-star reviews about the movie itself. Then the second one's kind of about James Cameron, which is a little bit of a twist.
Oh, okay.
And it says a lot that I want to say about this movie, so all I'm right. putting that one out there.
You and I both have strong feelings on Mr. Cameron.
Let's
as well.
Let's get this one addressed.
I recently visited Mr. Cameron's Avatar Land.
Oh, what kind of stuff did you do there?
I saw a real live
alien
avatar.
Drinks and eat some alien foods.
No, but it used to be just Epcot was the boozing.
Mm-hmm. The boozing capital.
The boozing
of,
capital of Disney.
Disney World.
That Animal Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, it's awfully inviting for booze hounds.
For its money.
Like us, so, you know.
Gonna go get drunk and yell at a lion.
Now that they got that Star Wars ride, I'm sure Avatar is no longer the state-of-the-art ride.
Okay.
But, you know.
James Cameron's not going to like that. He's all about state-of-the-art.
If you don't feel like waiting 4 hours in ride for that Millennium Falcon, or 4 hours in line for that Millennium Falcon ride, go check out Avatar.
I'll wait at the bar while all the people that I'm with wait in the line to go on a ride. That'll be my strategy.
There's no cantina bar, sorry.
Go to fucking Disney World. This first review addresses some of the criticism that's out there that a lot of people have. Most of the one-star reviews I found, one-bullet reviews, said stuff along the same line. So I'm going to just do, this is actually a half-bullet review from Letterboxd user Steve Dude.
Steve Dude.
He says, a nasty movie that gaslights its audience into a selfish and cruel power fantasy sold as a wacky action comedy. All the mugging for the camera and zingers are wildly out of place, and none of the jokes land, except as bizarre artifacts of 90s movie trends. Double takes, falling down, bug eyes, a bellhop diving out of the way of a horse. This movie never earns its camp because it isn't harmless and silly. It is actually mean to its non-white characters, its women, its kids, its less muscular characters. All of them are marked for death or control by either Arnold's Harry or the deadly slash clever slash bumbling slash incompetent terrorist leader. Fuck this movie. Half bullet from Steve Dude.
You got a date on that? When that was published?
No, I don't have any sort of data.
Very
on that.
Curious.
But a lot of this stuff out there, it's some valid stuff I'm going to say. This movie treats women like idiots. It treats brown people as faceless fucking villains.
Okay, hold on.
Go-go America,
pump
rah,
the brakes,
stuff going
pump the
on
brakes.
In here.
Mr. Cameron.
Is this an 80s movie or is this a 90s
Mr.
movie?
Mr. Cameron explained originally the terrorists were going to be Irish.
Mm-hmm.
But then he found out there was a little movie coming out in 94 as well.
There's no way I'm gonna top that.
Yeah. And he's like, well, they're already
blown away.
They're already doing Irish IRA terrorists. And he's like, well, fuck it.
Also, a little bit prescient because the fucking Middle Eastern terrorists did blow up one of our cities.
Yeah.
So, in your eye, James Cameron knew what he was talking
about.
And
if anybody paid attention, they reference Kazakhstan in the beginning.
Also,
that's home of Borat,
sort
okay?
Of, they're like...
It's not that dangerous.
The two Arnolds, their IT guy, did seem like he was sort of had a Middle Eastern thing going on. And he was a good guy.
He was brown.
He was fun. He was riffing.
Get over it.
This next one-bullet review is it's a criticism that I 100% am behind. I think the last one, it's like, come on, it's a fun action movie. Cut it some slack. This one I'll agree with entirely because I watched this movie on a super, super shitty DVD that I've had probably since like 1998 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This one bullet review is from Amazon user Cameron.
Hmm. Is it James Cameron?
It's not. Wait till you hear this. The director's treatment of this movie since its theatrical release has been nothing short of shambolic. It's a great movie, and if you happen to catch a true 1080p version on a premium cable channel, then hopefully you have your DVR ready. The delay of the release of these to Blu-ray is down to James Cameron needing to spend a whopping 14 hours to review the transfer. That's it, and the studio has to wait. Occasionally, Fox will sanction their HD release to cable for a month, but home video? We're still stuck with poor Laserdisc transfers and widescreen for 4x3 TVs. This is basically the same poor treatment Lucas gave the Star Wars original theatrical release movies in the 2006 Best Buy DVD release, and Lucas never wanted those original releases to be seen again. Just an FYI on why some Cameron movies made it to Blu-ray. Aliens happened because Fox forced it, because he only directed one of the movies in the series, and they basically said they'd release the collection with or without Aliens. Terminator 2, Lionsgate just went ahead and did it. Kudos to them. Yes, Titanic made it to Blu-ray, but took forever because Cameron wanted the 3D transfer to be perfect. Of course, he took so long that 3D was defunct by the time it came out.
That's true.
True Lies in the Abyss are planned for 4K and Blu-ray for 2019, but quote unquote, it's a question of time management. True Lies and Abyss both have Blu-ray transfers that are complete for my review. The problem is the next 14 hours when I have to go back and trim the color and get each one perfect. That's 28 hours. I don't have 28 hours, says James Cameron. 29 and 30-year-old movies that people love? His response, I don't have 28 hours. I didn't have 7 hours to waste being forced to watch Titanic twice with my girlfriend at the time. Ooh. But I managed it, Jim. R.I.P. Bill Paxton. Maybe one day we'll get to see you pee yourself in decent resolution. One bullet from Amazon user Cameron.
I kind of like that review.
I liked it too, because fuck the shitty DVD this is on. Right now you can watch it if you do a 1 week Cinemax fucking trial.
Which is what I did.
Cinemax has that short term fucking lease thing of Fox's transfer that Cameron won't look at.
Yep.
For the moment, but in the larger scale of things, you can't watch a good fucking copy of True Lies at home right now, which is a goddamn travesty.
I did. It looked great.
Oh, good. I hope you had your DVR ready. Is that a thing? I don't know. I haven't had a DVR in a long ass time.
Yeah, I streamed it through Apple. I streamed it by getting the free week of Cinemax trial run through Amazon Prime on my Apple TV.
Remember to fucking, just remember to cancel that shit, ladies and gentlemen. You don't want Cinemax getting your fucking money.
They've got some good movies on there right now, so it's not a... It's only brought
to you by Cinemax.
$9.99 for a month.
Give them a try.
It's not a terrible...
This five-bullet review is from a Letterboxd user named Comrade Yi. Y-U-I, I don't know. It's foreign shit. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Must be North Korea.
This is sort of a...
Or South.
This is sort of a rebuttal to that first review, I think, is why I wrote, put it in here. Posits the security state as a series of paranoiac male fantasies, with the truth they orbit being that women also have paranoiac fantasies of their own. Cameron here frames Arnold like a vengeful god. It's incredibly powerful. It rivals the humanist champion Arnold from Total Recall. This is peak Arnie. It's all downhill after this. He was never this fucking great again. Also contains possibly the best villain death in any movie. 5 stars from the comrade. I'll agree with that.
Very hard to argue that one.
His godlike white male, just fucking lean into it. You're not going to make him be anything else.
Hard to argue with that one.
This last review is just... It's
you're not God. You're not my dad. You're not my boss.
Speaking of belligerent weirdos, this last one's a 5-bullet review from IMDb user Boba Fett 1138.
He sounds cool.
Boba Fett has to say, biggest problem with most action movies is that they take themselves way too serious. True Lies is mainly fun and entertaining, and on top of that, the action is top class. Finally, a movie of which I can say, budget well spent. The action really jumps off the screen, but it never feels overdone or forced, which is thanks to action director veteran James Cameron. He should stick to directing action movies like this, the Terminator movies and Aliens. Please, no more movies like Titanic. Stick to where your talent lies. The movie can be described as an American James Bond, meaning that everything is bigger, and I'm not just talking about Arnie's chest. Just like the James Bond movies, it doesn't take itself seriously without making itself ridiculous. Many people seem to have problems with the whole wife sidetrack storyline. I guess I'm one of the few that doesn't mind it at all, and actually find it an extra addition to the story.
Amen.
The movie has everything a good action movie need. A believable action hero, explosions, chases, gunfights, a stereotype villain, and a high entertainment value. I wish more action movies like this would be made. 5 bullets from Boba Fett 1138. We got an amen, a preach there from Matt, so I'm going to think you're somewhere in the same ballpark as Boba Fett. Let's hear your final thoughts and your bullet rating for True Lies on its 25th anniversary.
It's a hard one for me to... Been going back and forth with it. Like I said, love this movie. Mm-hmm. This is 94, mm-hmm. So I was 11, so I saw it on VHS. Ooh, didn't see it in the theater.
Pretty VHS.
And things came out probably a year later back DVD. Then. So I was probably 12 by the time I saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm 12. It's rated R.
I also saw this at 12, but it was on the big screen during original release, and I was blown the fuck away.
You know, that came out...
Same year. I was blown away the whole year, man.
Weeks apart. I loved it. My brothers loved it. Like I said, My parents loved it. Everybody loved this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to unpack here. Everybody's great in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in this movie that you're like, kind of wish they weren't in this or that. I forgot how long the movie was until you pointed it out to me a couple days ago.
It was a shock to me going into
this, like, oh,
having
God.
Not seen it for years.
Oh, man, that's a lot of time I got to invest out of my day. I mean, granted, it's not 14 hours.
No.
To do a high-res cut.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot of time. And you notice it.
Mm.
You do. Mm-hmm. You do. And there's a lot of weird slapstick and goofy this and goofy that. And
I loved it.
There's...
Give me more slapstick.
I guess misogynistic views or whatever you want to say.
That's damn true.
This and that,
I wouldn't
whatever.
Say it in such a condescending tone, though.
But it was 94. Get off your horse, you know?
Yeah, not 84. That's the point. Hanging. I'm hanging on
It's
right now.
Just fun.
Suspenseful. So much fun.
4.5.
4.5 bullets.
I'm going. I'm pulling it.
Matt.
Pulling the trigger.
Not quite the full Monty, but...
It's not like a blown away to me, but it's as close as it's going to get. Like, this is just great action fun here. And it's going to be a long, long time to get another movie like this ever again. End of an era. True Lies.
I gotta support a lot of shit you said there. I think this is James Cameron's best non-Terminator movie. Spent a ton of money on it. All that money's up on the screen. You can see where it went.
Guys, Aliens isn't that great.
Big action. It's through the whole movie. You never get a down point where you're like, oh, when's the action gonna start again? Comedy should not work, but it all works.
Right?
It's all physical comedy. It's got a real Buster Keaton quality to it where it's like shit that makes you like gasp at the same time that it makes you chuckle. Like, oh God, that was really dangerous, but also funny. Schwarzenegger, I think this might be his best performance acting-wise.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a lot of nuanced stuff here. He's doing a different kind of character. Great chemistry with Tom Arnold. Bill Paxton, he gets maybe the greatest side character role in any movie ever. Jamie Lee Curtis... Pretty thankless female role, but she clearly hit the gym for that dancing sequence. And,
oh, yeah.
Ooh, it paid off.
Ooh.
It paid off.
Ooh.
She nailed it. Fucking nailed it. Only problem with this movie is that no fucking action movie, no matter how good it is, should ever be 141 minutes.
Yeah.
Nowhere even fucking close to it. You gotta cut at least 20 minutes out of this fucking thing.
No wonder Avatar's 3 days long.
4.5 bullets.
Yeah, you're
also
right there.
Got 4.5 bullets. We're right on the same fucking page.
It's
can't give it the full Monty because there's a couple other Cameron movies I'd want to do that for more.
I get
and
it.
And it is too long.
Yeah, there's you could come
but
up.
Man, do I love it. Man,
you
do
could,
I love it.
At this, in the same breath, you could have told me 3.5 and listed the complaints we just
That's
listed,
true. Yeah,
and I
yeah.
get it, and you're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason,
I think there's a little bit of
this movie just.
There's
just
a little
works.
Bit of just nostalgia twinge I get because I consider this the last great movie of the golden age of action movies. After this came out, action movies started to look different. It was a different genre. You can still put this next to the 80s stuff.
It's not just that,
it's the
though.
Last
like,
big hurrah.
Again, I've seen this movie a lot of times, but I haven't seen it in a couple years. And
it's
just
because there's no decent release of it.
Watching it back today, it was like, yeah, it's a little lengthy, but it's everything still hit. Every single thing. Even the things like I tried to be like, you know, critical of.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, fuck it, but
nope.
I enjoyed it.
Pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know what else gets pulled off? Fucking people's limbs during Steven Seagal movies.
Oh,
he's constantly fucking ripping arms and legs out of sockets and shit.
Oh, God.
Next week, man. Fucking Action Mount Rushmore continues.
I don't know if I'm ready for this.
We're watching Steven Seagal and Hard to Kill. It's going to be fucking kick dick exciting. Get ready for it.
It's going to be hard to kill, but it's going to be easy to listen to on Baby Oil and Blow Stay Single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you
could use a friend.